Got this terrible vision of Michael Hecht dancing to this song, but he's a Swiftie at heart.
That is truly a shocking vision. But you know what? I could have done it this past weekend. Who knows? Look, we talked about it before. The only sin in New Orleans is being boring. And, you know, you put me in a tutu and some sparkles, and I'm a lot of things, but boring's probably not one of them.
And you never miss a beat, so there it is, man.
No, I'm something on my feet. I tell you, man, it was. I haven't experienced anything. I was kind of taken aback by last weekend. I haven't experienced that kind of ubiquitous energy and joy in this city, I don't think, since 2010 when we won the Super Bowl. I was kind of caught off guard by it. It was. I don't know. It's the show, the weather, the moment where we are kind of politically, where people just wanted to get together to pop music and trade friendship bracelets. It was something. It was a phenomenon, you know, in the real sense.
You know what I really liked about it is we executed. And it wasn't a one-night deal. It was a three-night gig, which is unusual. And I think we pulled it off. The city pulled it off, I should say, in a masterful way every night.
Yeah, for us, relative to the Super Bowl, you know, we saw this as a really significant dry run, because if you take the 65,000 people in the dome for three nights, that's close to 200,000 people, plus like the Swiftie wannabes. We could have had close to 250,000 people in the city, which is actually significantly more than we're going to get for the Super Bowl. I mean, the airport had its busiest day ever. And so our thought going into this, if to give one example of a system that was tested, if the Superdome could support 65,000 people simultaneously videoing a concert for 3.5 hours, then we were going to be just fine for the Super Bowl, because I don't think everybody's going in there and live streaming the Super Bowl, right? But they are for Taylor Swift. And so, you know, the Superdome internet passed with flying colors. The ride share down in Duncan Plaza worked really well. New Orleans had a cultural festival, went really well. The infrastructure that's been completed, like on Poydras Street, worked. The airport, for the most part, handled the numbers. And so I took it as both an excellent kind of heuristic, a good dry run to figure out what we have to do different or better, but also, encouraging, because the reason why there was such joy and people had such a good time is that we got the basics right, from safety to infrastructure to transportation. And so, it's encouraging, and it augurs well as we're just over 100 days out.
Yeah, so I'll thank everybody again, from the mayor on down to the council, everyone, the LSED, ASM, you guys, all the folks, New Orleans and Company, everybody that played a role in prepping for this. It paid off. Preparation matters, right? And obviously it revealed itself in this case. And as you point out appropriately, it's a great dry run for the Super Bowl. And actually, the Super Bowl in many respects may feel easy next to this. And I, like you, I was just completely amazed by the energy. Happened to be down in the Warehouse District, 5 hours before the concert. I was playing my Uber role courageously, and I was the only one without sequins down there.
Okay. Do you give people mints when they get in your car and offer them to charge their phone? Are you one of those kind of over the top?
No, I'm not to that extent. No, this was family, so they don't get that special treatment. But it was just incredible.
You don't even get to rate them. Yeah. So I'll leave you with this one. Here's my Taylor story. So I was just shocked by how ubiquitous Taylor Swift was. It was pop-up stores on the street. It was karaoke in the middle of the French Quarter. It was people saying, it was obviously on the radio. So then, we were also moving house this past weekend, which is not a particularly joyful event, but the Taylor Swift ever made it better. So we're actually in our storage unit, which is back on this side street that nobody goes down in the Lower Garden District, and I'm moving boxes, and life is not great right then. And I start hearing like Antihero or Cruel. I start hearing Taylor Swift, and I'm thinking, okay, I finally lost it. Taylor has broken me. I've now got like Taylor Swift in my head, and I can't escape it. But I look out the door, and there's this dude just walking down the cobblestone street alone with a wagon with two speakers hooked up to a car battery, just pumping Taylor Swift into the atmosphere, into the environment, like a mosquito fogger. And I'm thinking, man, like he just took it on himself to make sure there was no corner of the city that wasn't all Taylor all the time. And so, I just kind of gave into it.
I love getting texts like this, Michael. My daughter attended the Saturday show on crutches. Just wanted to say the ADA drop-off and pickup spot were great. Kudos to the Dome for that. And as a rideshare driver, I have to also congratulate the city and all of its nonprofits who participated in this event. In my opinion, it went off without a hitch. It was a pleasure to offer my support to our residents and tourists for the show. Let's keep it going. Kudos.
So my God, will you forward that to me? I want to send it, to the stadium people. Thank you. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, and it, a lot of it was really, really worked well, and that's good news for everybody. And I think you pointed out that many folks that visited the French Quarter describe Bourbon Street as the safest it's ever been.
I was down there for a relative's birthday party just by coincidence, which originally caused consternation because they're like, how are we going to get there? But I haven't seen the French Quarter this accessible is probably the right word, maybe ever. It was still the French Quarter. Bourbon Street was still Bourbon Street, but it was clean. It felt safe. I can't explain it, but I think the explanation for it is that these quality of life sweeps that we've now been doing for a couple of months that have been led by the 8th District, by the Health Department, by Troop NOLA, by all these city and state agencies, is working because those elements, which in an imperceptible initially but cumulative way make a place feel unsafe or edgy, are not there. You know, it's the people selling shots, it's the wild animals, it's the food and the unregulated golf carts. When those things go away, a sense of order is reestablished, and then people are able to fill in and have the freedom to fill in with their own extemporaneous joy, like the karaoke singers. And so it was I was just talking to somebody, and they said, you know, we need to write this down because it's interesting to understand what we did behind the scenes to create the conditions for all this seemingly spontaneous fun.
No, absolutely. And we got a lot going on. We're going to be visiting with Mark Romig, Chief Marketing Officer at New Orleans & Company, after this segment, our segment. And it's going to be interesting to see what we have coming on. I said earlier, Michael, that we are drunk with success. We don't have long to work through the hangover because we got to get right back at it because we got some major conventions coming to town, which is great.
We've got, I mean, look, it's, I don't quote Drake much these days after he was like, you know, canceled by Kendrick Lamar, but one of his better lines is, it's a rollie, not a stopwatch. It never stops. I mean, we're just, at this point, the year is over. It's, you know, it's Super Bowl, it's Mardi Gras, it's Jazz Fest. Before you know it, it's July, and we're wondering about getting to the summer. We're at the steep part of the slope right now. We inflected.
Michael, we recently lost another legend here, someone in the media who has been at the top of his game for over four decades, which, I mean, it's got to be record-setting as it relates to this city for sure. I don't know that anyone's even close to the number that, where he served at WWL-TV, and that's Eric Paulson.
Yeah, Eric was a good friend of mine. He actually, as you know, Newell, because you were there as well, he served as the MC for the roast that we did back in April with Delgado, which was the perfect role for him because he was a spokesperson, he was a leader, one of the most wickedly funny people that I knew, but was always able to convey it with, a sense of caring and kindness and commitment underneath the remarks and the jokes. And, you know, it just, you know, this was all very, very sudden. I don't think, you know, any of us couldn't have possibly imagined that back in April, it was the last time we'd all be together doing something like this. But I think that, you know, somebody like Eric, what he did professionally at WWL, the friendships he had, and just his attitude, which kind of embodied the joy and the spirit and the humor of New Orleans, as well as the commitment in tough times, because through four decades, man, he was the anchor through some of the roughest times in the city's history, like Katrina.
Yeah, absolutely.
That stuff sticks with you, and that's how people live on, and how they kind of modeled how to engage life with a sense of humor and bravery, but ultimately, super deep commitment. So I appreciate you letting us talk about Eric.
Yeah, it was interesting as an elected official, with the media, you always have your guard up, and he always had this uncanny ability, and I know you know this, about, getting to you to let your guard down, just with humor, and it was always the case with him, and he's one of the few people I knew that could pull it off at 5:30, 5:45 a.m., right? Because no one else is thinking in that context.
I still remember one of my first interviews with him when I was running the post-Katrina small business program for the state. I went on, it was like 5:45 a.m. down on Rampart Street. And he said, "So, Michael, when can people expect their checks?" And I said, "Well, they should expect them, within 2 weeks." And he stopped and he put his paper down. He looked at me, he goes, "No, really, Michael, when are they really going to get them?" And it was that moment where, he kind of forced me to be like, and it was a great, him using humor to disarm, a young kind of semi-public official and get closer to the truth. You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, Jeff Landry is the governor, is out in Seoul, South Korea, to meet with government leaders. Tell us about this endeavor.
This is the first major overseas trip that the governor has taken. He's there with Secretary Susan Bourgeois, my former board chair is there as well as other business leaders. And they're meeting on some specific projects, which I can't talk about. But the bigger opportunity here, this is what's so interesting. So under Landry, we have a totally revitalized Louisiana economic development and approach towards economic development. I mean, we're back in the game in a very aggressive way. It's just kind of reflective of the governor's personality, which is aggressive, optimistic, transactional, all the things you need in economic development. What's interesting about South Korea is that it's one of our biggest trade partners, combined market value of close to $5 billion. And if you think about what you have in Korea, everything from heavy industry to automaking to high tech, if we can make kind of Louisiana South Korea's preeminent trading partner, the sky's the limit. I mean, we don't need China or Japan. If we just have Korea for Louisiana, it could pay enormous dividends for our exports and imports. So I think that's kind of the meta, or that kind of is the ultimate strategy here, is to have South Korea understand that Louisiana is kind of a kinder, gentler, more accessible Texas who doesn't yet suffer from winning. We're kind of like Avis, number two, yeah, and trying harder. And so, right? Was Avis OJ? No, that was Hertz. That didn't work out
well,
right? Okay, yeah. So we're Avis.
But I think
Avis.
You would agree. I don't know about you, but I've done some reading about South Korea and, more importantly, the South Korean economy. Intriguing country, really is. On so many different fronts.
Intriguing country in that this was a place that back in the 50s was really a backwater, and they set out on a very structured plan that was around education, was around target industries economically. They even invented their own language, right? Korean is a fairly new language. And the result, and of course you have the kind of living experiment of North Korea versus South Korea. So I think there's a lot for us to learn also about how you can do things structurally to achieve success within a generation. So I'm very encouraged that the governor is there. The governor is not a guy who goes on a lot of these trips for boondoggle purposes. He goes only if his time is going to be very well spent. And so I think this is what economic development should look like, and I do think that it's going to pay both immediate dividends, but also in the midterm, I think we're going to have both a relationship and a model with South Korea. And also, and this is the other thing, too, if you really think about it, Newell, we have a lot in common. Like, we both have soul food. Get it?
Right.
We both have soul food. Soul
I got
food.
A text here. I got it, Michael. One of the other things Koreans are number one in is drinking and partying. So obviously not always a positive, but it does mirror the New Orleans good time culture.
Let me put it this way. The Koreans go hard. I've been in some of those dinners, and there's one of those ones where it goes from having fun to start thinking about like survival techniques. And I've had it. Yeah. So anyway, so I think this is good stuff, and we'll wait and see the results.
New leadership at the port. Exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. So Beth Branch is joining us at the port. She is brings a ton of really relevant experience. She was at the Port of Mobile, where she was the chief commercial officer. So basically, her job was to grow the container business. She was there since 2021. And what's interesting about that is that that's where Mobile was beating us. I mean, about 3 years ago, Mobile surpassed us in container traffic. And the truth is that that Beth was really the lead architect of that. Before that, she'd been in the port of Oakland, and then before that, she spent almost 20 years at Maersk, at the U.S. regional headquarters outside New York and in the global headquarters in Denmark. Maersk is one of the biggest shippers and logistics companies in the world, so a really good technical and professional experience, but also as I come to know her, she's a lovely person. And, you know, we talk, you know, in New Orleans and in Louisiana, IQ is good, but IQ without EQ, you know, is a dog that doesn't hunt. And I think she's got the emotional kind of qualities, the personality to match her experience and smarts. And so I'm really optimistic about what's going to happen at the port.
Absolutely. On the text line, the individual that sent us a text about Seoul said, "Hey, Noel, I just had a flat tire when I pulled up to the house. I was upset. Then I heard your smooth voice and I felt better. My tire has already changed and my dogs and I are now going down the road listening to WWL again from Gulf Shores. Great signal, good signal today. P.S. I was born in Seoul." So this individual knows what he's talking about as it relates to
They do know
Korea.
What they're talking about. And what I'm actually really happy about is that they got this flat tire from a pothole, not in New Orleans, but in Gulf Shores. And so, right.
Hey, I went over the Michael Heck sector of Poydras as I was Ubering my family from the concert the other evening, smooth as a baby's, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I tell you, Noel, I mean, I'm so ecstatic about what's happening on Poydras Street. I'm looking at it right now. I'm thinking about stopping traffic, going to the top of that on-ramp, right, you know, onto the interstate over there off of the Poydras by the green space, strap it on some of those airline skate, old school, you know, four on a skates, some leg warmers, putting on some Al Green, and just going all the way down,
not,
you know, all,
not
all
Taylor
the way down
Swift?
To Hilton.
Not,
you know,
you've already
I'm thinking,
abandoned
I'm gonna
Taylor
go,
Swift?
I just can't escape her. I mean, you know, I got to kind of drown her out sometimes. She's everywhere, you know, I can't quit her.
I saw Al Green at the Blue Room. It was one of the best concerts I've ever been to. He was smooth, baby. Smooth.
That guy.
Loved
he
it.
Had. He was.
Still remember.
Here's an idea. Let me put this into the ether. Then we can talk about other news. But because there is actually other news in the world besides Taylor Swift. But what was interesting about this weekend is that it wasn't really a concert. It was a show like at the Liza Minnelli level. And I was thinking about, you know, maybe New Orleans needs to do more of these like large scale residences with you know, entertainers of the scale of like a Stevie Wonder, where you could come in for the show, but you're really making a long weekend of it because it's that big of an event. It's that kind of much of a time and money sink. I just feel like this is a place we could do. If people are going to Vegas just for the Sphere and stay for 2 or 3 days, I think we could do more of that here with world-class artists, you know, give them, you know, an extended residency and kind of develop a whole new, you know, tranche of tourism that way. Is that a crazy idea or does it resonate?
Yeah, in fact, I think you're right. Look, you know, bucket list for me was Red Rocks outside of Denver.
Of course.
You know, bucket list for me now was going to the Sphere. So we're going and we're going to see the Eagles for about the fourth or fifth time. But who cares? Because I love the Eagles. So, you know, and we're going to make a trip out of it. And I think we can develop that same thing here. We have so much to offer. I mean, when you think about the new Caesars, Four Seasons, all the other hotels and the great restaurants that we have. This is an experience place. And, you know, we don't realize it. We don't recognize it. We take it for advantage until...
We just take it for granted. You know, that's right.
You take it for granted, I mean, until someone else tells us, you know, about it. And I had that most recent experience in Newport, of all places, in a church where people said they come every year for French Quarter Fest. They never, ever miss. And they have no connection to the city other than they came down here to experience the city and French Quarter Fest was going on, and they've been every year since for, I think, over a decade. You begin to figure it out, right? It was the church at JFK, and the First Lady were married right there in Newport. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Stay with us, folks. That's Michael Heck producing my show yet again. Got a text here, Michael. My wife saw the Eagles at the Sphere a few weeks ago. She can't stop talking about it. She took some videos of the concert. The venue looks amazing. Have you been yet?
No, I haven't been. That's a definite bucket list. I'm looking for an excuse to go out there. I just want to see the spectacle of it. Apparently, it was like, is it true? Like $2 billion to construct?
Yeah.
Is that possible, or am I making that up?
It was something like that, off the rails. I mean,
you wonder
how the ROI is going to work on that. But yeah.
Well, yeah, because somebody was like, well, you see, the reason why they did that is that it's all digital, so it's very inexpensive to put on a show. I'm like, yeah, you need to sell a lot of $250 tickets. Like, people don't realize how much a billion is. Can we go through this exercise again, Newell? So how many seconds are there? And how many days is 11 is a million seconds? How many days is a million seconds?
How many, Michael?
11 days. 11 days. How many days is a billion seconds?
I have no idea, Michael.
Good answer. 32 years. Right? So like a billion's a lot. So like that's a lot of Eagle shows. But anyway, yeah, I can't wait. It looks awesome.
So, Michael, let's get to our guest. We have a special guest today.
This is, an old friend of mine, Emily Egan, who is now the Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Freeman School of Business. She had been at Idea Village for many years. We worked together. But now she's at the Albert LePage Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. And so she's here to discuss the GNO Startup Report.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on, Emily. You must be a very understanding person if you're a long, long friend of Michael Heck, for sure.
Well, time is a construct, right? It's just...
As he just pointed out by knowing, you know, how many seconds of this and that and everything else, right?
Right. I know. I was counting on one hand. I was trying to figure it out. It's just a little bit too much math for me on this Wednesday morning.
no doubt, for sure. So... Emily, you guys have issued this Greater New Orleans Startup Report. I believe this is the sixth year, and it kind of sets the benchmark for tracking entrepreneurial activity. Tell us about this year's survey.
Yeah, so this year we did the data collection for this year's survey in the first quarter of 2024, so basically essentially February through May, right? We worked with 41 partners to get survey responses from the 10 parish region. And this year we, you know, released the report a little bit earlier this year than we have in the past couple of years. And so we just released the report last week. We have a little bit over, you know, somewhere between 100 to 150 to 200 responses. And it's a great way to showcase sort of what the opportunities are, what people are seeing as maybe threats or concerns, as well as a way to delineate things that are going on with specifically the high growth population of startups, as well as the small business community.
So I know that there's a number of takeaways. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've seen a couple of, you know, nothing like hugely great and nothing hugely bad, right? So I think what we see is we see some hiring intentions are slowing down. So we have the lowest sort of hiring intention for this year than we've had since the report started. But where you're seeing that is mostly in the small business community. So over 70% of the high growth startups are planning on hiring. So that that hesitation is really more in the small business group. And so I would say about 18% across the board are not planning on hiring this year. Again, I don't see that necessarily as a huge problem, but it is just noteworthy in the sense of what we've been looking at. We see home offices have now returned to the, you know, preferred workplace after 2 years of it being leased commercial space, which was an interesting sort of deviation from what we were seeing in previous years, as well as what we were seeing in the broader landscape of remote work and things like that. But this year, home offices have returned. And then what we also see is more companies have raised more of their equity, you know, fundraising, so their venture capital, angel investment from outside of the region, as well as more companies have raised over $1 million than we've seen in the history of the report. So those are some high-level data notes, but I think the biggest thing that we've seen is coming out of this report is the perception of business owners on AI.
And what is it?
Yeah, so we added a few questions this year as it relates to how people perceive certain technologies as opportunities, threats, and what they see as being the long-term impact on their industry. So what was interesting is if you take AI, machine learning, and generative AI together, both as a threat, as the long-term impact, and the opportunity, those were the top choices. So over 60% of the respondents see it as both an opportunity, a threat, and the thing that will have its longest long-term impact on the industry. And so what we see there is that people recognize that the value is there, that they see that it's a big deal. But I think what you're when you drill it down a little bit further, it's a knowledge gap of how do we use it, when do we use it, and what's the benefit of, you know, of it to me and my business. And I think that presents a really great opportunity for us as an ecosystem to really lean into that and talk about where those benefits lie and how to effectively use it. Or if you're in a startup space, how to build it.
Emily, is kind of what driving that, this maybe uncertainty of how far does it go and how much we will embrace, and also with that, and I know this is a multitude of things I'm throwing at you, but the uncertainty of where the government comes in and regulates all of this.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of, you know, nervousness around it. I think you hear sort of the really cool things, but then you also can hear the really scary things with it. For Louisiana specifically, I see what just went through as far as, you know, positioning Louisiana to win and the creation of the sort of innovation unit underneath LED, that shows me that Louisiana specifically is interested in exploring this in a real way and seeing what AI and those technologies can do for businesses as well as the community. I mean, even within Tulane, we have faculty members that are getting grants to do AI projects that are more community engaged AI and how we can leverage AI to solve some of our greater, more, you know, greater community issues. So I think the opportunities do outweigh the negative. It just comes down to the intention, right? And so the intention of, you know, can we is also should we, right? And so that should we question is an important one to answer. And what does that mean? And really maintaining sort of that value of transparency and making sure that you're keeping things kind of on the level. But I definitely see Louisiana, specifically the things we're seeing coming from LED, that there's certainly an interest in what this could do for the broader economy.
You know, when I was at the sheriff's office, I had the technology section under me. And one of the things that always scared me is when you made the decision to go down a path, it was hard to retreat, right? Do you get the sense that folks are kind of still have this feeling out process there relative to AI?
You know, I think it really all boils down to sort of the discussion of what actually you're wanting to use it for, right? And so again, you have the, you know, what is called sort of that Magnificent Seven, right? So those are the Microsofts, Apples, Googles, Teslas. Those are the big guys, right? And those are the ones that are really, you know, using AI for like very large, one could argue, depending on where you fall on it, perceivably scary, maybe not, right? So those are the ones you want to kind of keep an eye on. For the standard AI user, I think what we just need to do is to just educate them on what the possibilities are. And then for them, to make the decision what's best for that specific business, right? And what makes sense for my employees, right? You know, there's always a fear that like AI is going to replace the workers. And while I don't necessarily agree with that sentiment, you know, one of our faculty members says AI may not replace you, but someone who knows how to use AI might. And so I think it's those types of things of getting people to understand that those benefits, what the risks are so that they can be mitigated, and then how to effectively use it.
Well, that's something we ought to be used to, because that's been part of the technology cycle all along.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
I mean, we've experienced that for, what, 3 decades now? I mean, maybe even 4?
Yeah, and I think even, you know, as you look in, it is being discussed as a way that's similar to that sort of tech boom. And, you know, I think that that's where those sort of glory days as well as horror stories come out, right? And so it's a matter of sort of shifting through those conversations, learning from those lessons, but really drilling it down to a community level of how AI and how these technologies can benefit us. You know, you look at what it just, you know, when President Biden was here a few months ago, you know, with the Cancer Moonshot Initiative with the $23 million. I mean, that's AI, right? So that's using
right.
AI to identify cancer cells. There's so many opportunities. And even, you know, the World War II Museum is using AI to help people interact with those that were involved in the war effort. You know, so there's really creative ways on the tourism side, but there's really fantastic and world-changing ways that AI can be used in terms of, you know, biotechnology and healthcare that could really be game changing.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what are the startups hearing from potential investors, and if there are concerns that they're articulating about investing in AI and from that perspective. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., as well as Emily Egan, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Freeman School of Business, Albert LePage Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the Tulane University. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. There we go again. Michael Heck programming the show, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and Emily Egan, Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Freeman School of Business, Albert LePage Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Emily, let's real quick talk about from the investor standpoint. Was anything revealed in the survey?
Yeah, so on the investor side of things, you know, I think we see there's more activity coming from outside of New Orleans. The majority of funding for companies that filled out the survey were getting the majority of their funding from outside investors. That's both a good thing and you know, it's neither good, actually, it's really neither good nor bad, right? But it is a good testament to say that people are actually able to access funding outside of the region, which was at one point in time really a challenge. And I think, you know, you're seeing people being able to raise, you know, more money. So like I mentioned before, we have a greater population than we've had in the report have raising over $1 million in venture capital angel investment. And so that's also, you know, a good telling sign. And I think as the SSBCI dollars, that's the Small Business Credit Initiative, money starts to get really deployed out, I think that those are areas where we're going to see some positive trends in that direction.
And this goes to both of y'all. I mean, I asked about the AI stuff perspective. Anything unique that investors are thinking about in that regard?
Well, it's hard to say as it relates to New Orleans specifically or the region. We don't have a ton of AI companies. I think that's, again, where the opportunity is. But what you see nationally is that while venture capital is slowing down, the big money is going towards AI companies, right? And so they are willing to take that gamble on AI with, you know, I mean, you have ChatGPT just got an investment in October that makes them, you know, $6.6 billion, right? And so that's the highest valued startup in ever. And so that just shows you where investors are seeing sort of that opportunity.
Yeah, Michael?
Yeah. Well, what I'd say, I think there's a bank shot opportunity for this in Louisiana. One AI like ChatGPT search takes 17 times the energy of a Google search, so it's very energy intensive. And at the same time, there's all this pressure for lower carbon energy. So if Louisiana can become the leader in all of the above lower carbon energy strategy, everything from traditional to hydrogen to wind to solar to nuclear even, then we can actually be we can ride the gravy train of AI by being the folks that help supply the power to these data centers and the cloud around the country and the world. I think that's actually maybe our greatest kind of bank shop opportunity here.
Absolutely. And folks, thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate your time, your insight, as always, and have a great week.
Thanks so much.
Just waiting to hear what the outro is, folks.
I have no control of this. It's all in your hands, Michael.
It's all in my head, Noel. Thank you, my friend.
As always, we'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us, folks. On the text line, listening to the show, you sparked some good memories. My dad played at the Blue Room for over 30 years and retired in 1988. I was lucky enough to meet many of the performers that would do two-week stints there. Good times. Actually, they were great times. I wish that would come back. It was such a unique experience right there at the Blue Room. In fact, my drum teacher was the drummer in the house band there, and my mind just went blank as to his name. I can see his face like it was yesterday. Last Thursday, I attended the Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Mahalia Jackson Theater. The real horror was the lagoon. I've heard this so many times in front of the theater. The water was dank, covered with slime and smelled. It's a beautiful park, but why is the lagoon not maintained? It's awful. We're going to try and get some answers to these questions. And, folks, we're talking about the lights on the interstate still out. We'll get answers to that as well. We'll be right back.